We have some great programs lined up for you during Holy Week, and here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Holy Week programming. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Holy Week bulletin insert. The bulletin insert can be used for the weekend of Palm Sunday, April 1st. issuesetc.org and click support.
I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be a Jet.
Well, I tell you, the way the Jets have played recently, they need the good Lord on their side. So this could be a major move. Yeah.
I think that it's a job of immense demands, and I would hope that my successor has the constitution of an ox and the skin of a rhinoceros, really.
Because of Jesus, our Father hears us as though he were listening to his own dear Son, who is making constant intercession for us.
Seminarians on Vicarage in Indiana love Issues Etc.
My goodness, we have talked about this many times. And I think we probably could safely say that based upon the statistics and the research up to this point, if a couple cohabitated before marriage, that's a fancy way of saying if they just moved in and lived together before they got married, when they did get married, they were more likely to get divorced. Not certain to get divorced, but more likely statistically to be victims of divorce if they'd lived together before getting married. And now there's some new research, and the AP is reporting under the headline, "Move in before marriage no longer predicts divorce." We'll have to take that one apart here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, March the 27th. We'll be talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse about that research, getting an update on last Friday's Stand Up for Religious Freedom rallies. And then Pastor Bill Swirla will have the rest of the hour. We'll talk about Jesus' words by which he gives us to pray, "Hallowed be thy name." Join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or our Twitter address at issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing good. You were one of the speakers in San Diego this last week for the Stand Up for Religious Freedom rally held there. How did it go?
Oh, it was a fabulous event, Todd. It was just wonderful. First of all, we had gorgeous weather in San Diego, as we always do. And if you go to the San Diego Stand Up for Religious Liberty Facebook page, you'll see some of the photos from the event, and you can see the ocean in the background, and you can see the ships and so on in the background. So that's kind of a cool thing. But standing at the podium and looking out over the crowd, I think there were probably 1,500 to 2,000 people there, Todd. It was huge. It was just huge. There was no significant counter protest. And looking at the lineup of speakers, it was the whole Prop 8 coalition reassembled for this occasion. So we had a different Roman Catholic bishop than we did then. We have a new bishop in San Diego, so he spoke for us, so that was wonderful. And we had a bishop of the Church of God in Christ, and we had a Baptist, and we had a Mormon, and we had a Hispanic pastor, and little old me, and you know, just kind of the whole gang of pro-marriage, pro-life, pro-religious freedom people were there. So it was really a marvelous event.
Very glad that went well. Here's something that might, you know, gave me pause to read the headline and then the story that followed it, because you and I have talked about this many times. Statistically speaking, if a couple lives together before marriage, it was a predictor, not a certain predictor, but definitely made them more likely to divorce later. And now the AP reports move in before marriage no longer predicts divorce. What's going on here?
Well, you know, first of all, if you read that's what the headline says, but as usual, if you read the article, it doesn't really say that, because if you read the article, it just says, it's not as strong a correlation as it used to be. Oh, well, thanks. But the correlation is still there, you know, so if you don't get married. Well, anyway, I won't try to quote the statistics because I don't have them right in front of me. But the correlation isn't as strong as it used to be, but it's still there, you know. So, and particularly if you cohabit but are not engaged, your probability of divorce is higher than if you do not cohabit. The group that is that kind of clouds the issue are people who cohabited when they got engaged, or they cohabited but only with the person they later married, because that group of people is not as apt to, they look more like people who just got married, you know, kind of a thing. They don't look as much like the full-on cohabiting couple. So if you have more of those people in your data set, if you have more of those people in the pool of people you're analyzing, it will look like cohabiting is not that big of a deal. But it's still the case that cohabiting with somebody you're not engaged to is a big risk factor for later divorce. So I think that data, despite the headline, does nothing to refute the position that you and I have been talking about all along, which from a personal point of view, that's the thing you care about. You know, you care for yourself. Is it a good idea for me to move in with my boyfriend today or not? You know, and basically what we've talked about all along, I don't think this data does anything to call that into question.
Okay, so there's another takeaway from this, and this has also been touted in the press, that is a little chilling. 60% of couples live together before they marry. What do you make of
that? Yes, well, see, that's the other thing that makes the statistics more complicated. If more people move into one of the two, you've got two things you're trying to compare. But if you don't have any variation in the data, if everybody's doing the one thing, you don't have anything left to compare them to. So that's part of what is happening, is that the pool of people, just as a statistical matter, right? So you're having you're shifting the average around just because many more people are cohabiting. But apart from the statistics, what does it mean that people are cohabiting? I think that part of what it means, Todd, is that the assault on marriage is doing its work. The cultural assault on marriage is taking its toll on people's thinking, because the whole culture for a long time has been saying to people, oh, marriage is just a piece of paper, don't worry about it, go ahead and, you know, move in with your boyfriend, kind of a thing, it doesn't matter. Now the cultural message is just somewhat different. The cultural message is still present. Oh, it's just a piece of paper, don't worry about it. That's what heterosexuals still kind of hear. But at the same time, we're saying, oh, we must by all means let gay couples participate in marriage. But by the time you do that, the thing you're calling marriage is much less significant, because now the thing you're calling marriage is not a presumably lifelong, presumably procreative union of a man and a woman. Now the thing you're calling marriage is more or less a government registry of friendships, which doesn't have very much significance either socially or personally. And so people, in a way, are taking that to heart, right, that it really doesn't matter that much whether you get married or don't get married. It's more kind of a symbol of public acceptance, and if you're the kind of person who doesn't much care about public acceptance, you can just kind of put a thumb in the eye of the authority structures in your life by saying, well, we're not going to get married, you know. So I think the cultural confusion around marriage and the cultural denigration of marriage that has really been implied in a way in the whole debate over the definition of marriage, I think it's doing its work. I think that's part of what you're seeing.
One of the ways of characterizing the situation comes in the story from Richard Setterson, who is an Oregon State University professor of human development and family science. And he says, cohabitation, I'm quoting, is a trial marriage, usually without kids, that often ends in marriage. What do you make of that description?
Well, I think what he's saying, I read that statement too and was a little baffled by it. I think what he's saying is that cohabitation means different things to different demographic groups. And I'm quite certain that for some people, his statement is exactly correct, you know, that some people view it as a trial marriage. But I'm also certain that some people view it as a perfectly acceptable final condition, a perfectly acceptable end state. The big problem with cohabitation, I think the big psychological problem with cohabitation, is when the woman has one view and the man has the other view, and they're in the same couple, they're in the same cohabiting couple. So women quite often view it as a trial marriage and a stepping stone toward marriage. Men quite often view it as a perfectly acceptable end state. And that's where that couple has a lot of problems. And they, if they get married, they've got a lot of work to do to undo some of the mistrust and misunderstanding that they lived with and kind of swept under the rug for 2 or 3 years before they got married. That is precisely the dynamic that does a lot of harm in people's private lives, I would say, Todd.
One thing is held steady, got about a minute to respond, and that is the CDC study certainly did indicate that nearly half of first marriages will break up within 20 years. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm glad they said that. I'm glad they said that that way because most of the time people say, oh, 50% of marriages end in divorce, but they never put that qualifier on. They end in divorce within 20 years. One of the things that we find in the countries that have looked at same-sex unions and their stability rate, one of the things you see is that the same-sex unions will, 50% of them dissolve too, but they dissolve within a much shorter period of time. And so if you dissolve within 5 years versus dissolving within 20 years, that's a pretty significant difference in the stability of the union. And that is what you see in some of the studies that have come out of other countries. So I'm kind of glad in a way that that story put that qualifier on there, so that people could think about it, that a quote-unquote 50% divorce rate, that statistic by itself isn't enough to tell you what you want to know, right? You want to know within what period of time does the union end in divorce, and that's a significant indicator.
Folks, you can read Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse and the Ruth Institute's blog at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
You're welcome.
When we come back, Pastor Bill Swirl has got the rest of the hour with us on this Tuesday afternoon, March the 27th. We're going to be talking about the first petition, the first thing that Jesus instructs us to ask in his Lord's Prayer, Hallowed be thy name. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
We have some great programs lined up for you during Holy Week, and here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Holy Week programming. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Holy Week bulletin insert. The bulletin insert can be used for the weekend of Palm Sunday, April 1st. Issuesetc.org and click support.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoota, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming, Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana, Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois, and Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.